Masechet Baba Mesiyah Daf Nun Aleph. The Mishnah said, Ad matay mutar lahachazir. If someone was overcharged, then they can come back and complain. If it was 1/6, they can come back and they can say, oh, give me the money back, the overcharge. I want that money back. Or according to some, they can also cancel the entire sale if they want. However, there is a time limit, right? How long does he have to cancel it? The time it would take to go and show a merchant or show a relative and say, listen, I just bought this hammer here for $10. You're going to say, what? You paid $10, it's only worth $5. Okay, then you can go back and complain. However, let's say that's 1 hour. If after 1 hour passes and he doesn't complain, that's it. The window of opportunity closes. Amar Rav Nachman, lo shenu ela lokeach ava mocher le'olam hozer. Rav Nachman says that only applies to a buyer. However, a seller can return anytime forever if he was paid too little, right? I sold this thing and it was worth a lot more, and I realize even after many days, I can go back to the buyer and says, listen, you underpaid and you have to pay me the rest of it or cancel the sale. Okay, we're going to see the reason why for in a couple of minutes, why there's a difference between a buyer and a seller. Nema misaya lechazru ledibre chachamim. I amat bishlam amocher leolam hozer mishum hachi hazeru. Let's try to bring a proof for Rav Nachman from our very Mishnah, the second half of our Mishnah that talked about the bitarfon. He came and said, listen, the amount of overcharging is not a sixth, it's rather a third. And when he said that, the merchants of Lod were so happy because now they can overcharge more. And it was still, and it'll still be a valid sale. But then he said, "Oh, it's going to be all day. The window of opportunity is all day long." And then they said, "Forget it." They went back to the Chachamim. So that point that they went back to Chachamim, that seems to support Rav Nachman, because if you say like Rav Nachman that a seller can complain any time forever, so the Tagre Lod, the merchants of Lod, they were sellers. So this law does not affect them. The difference between 1 hour and 12 hours, let's say all day long is 12 hours. So that won't affect them because they can return any time. It only affects the buyer. And so beforehand, when they were following Chachamim, they thought that the window opportunity was 1 hour. Then the Bitarfon said, okay, you go from a sixth to a third. That's good. They like that. And it was still an hour. But then the Bitarfon came and said, instead of 1 hour, your buyers have all day long to come and return the item. They said, forget about it. That's going to benefit our buyers. That's going to hurt our bottom line, right? We'd rather be the overcharge amount be just a sixth, but they only have 1 hour, and then that's it. And then it's a final sale. So that makes sense why they went back to Chachamim. They'd rather have 1/6 as the margin and only 1 hour as the window of return. However, if you say the law for a buyer and a seller is the same, the window of opportunity is the same, whatever it is, that it's equal, then just like the rabbi said, that for a buyer, they have window opportunity for 1 hour, so to the seller. And then when the bitarfon says all day, although that's better for the buyer, now he has all day, it's also better for the seller, and they are sellers. So now, in case anyone ever underpays, they have all day long to come and get their money back. So that should be an equal, the equal benefit and equal detraction. So they should still follow the bitarfon, because he at least went from a sixth to a third, and the window of opportunity helps them as much as it hurts them. So this is a proof, the fact that they went back to Chachamim and didn't keep with the bitarfon, that's a proof that Rav Nachman is right, isn't it? And we say not necessarily. Tagare Lod la shechiach teta'u. These are professional merchants here in Lod. They're not going to make an error and sell something that was worth 6 that they're going to sell it for 5. They know the price. They're good negotiators. They're not going to make a mistake like that. So they don't care about the window of our opportunity for the seller. Right? If you say, oh, as the seller, you can go from being 1 hour to all day. They said they don't care. We don't make mistakes like that. We're never going to undercharge someone. But if for the buyer, these are unsuspecting buyers. These are tourists. They don't know what they're talking. They're doing. So for those people, we want to be able to overcharge them, and we want to give them the smaller window opportunity. That helps us much more. We don't make mistakes in any case. And so it's possible to explain the Mishnah, not according to Rav Nachman. It's not a proof against Rav Nachman, because you can also still explain the Mishnah. The Mishnah can explain either way. So anyway, that's what Rav Nachman said. And that was a story in which Rav Nachman actually ruled according to his own opinion. The landlord of Rami Bar Chama, Rav Chama, one of the great sages, contemporary chevruta and brother-in-law of Rava, both of their teachers was Rav Chista. They both married the daughter of Rav Chista, one after the other. Anyway, Rami Bar Chama, his landlord sold a donkey, and he made a mistake on the price. The donkey was worth 60. He should have gotten 60, but he charged only 50, and so he felt bad. Ashkecheda va asib. Amale amai asibat. Rami Bar Chama sees his landlord. He comes home. He sees him. Says, "What happened? Why are you sad?" Amale zebeni chamadot. I sold my donkey, and I made a mistake. I only got 50. I could have gotten 60. Amar le zil hadar bach. He says, "Oh, you can go back, and you can go back on the sale. You can go get that money back." Amar le shehai li yoter mikadesh ar el atagad o likrobi. But Rami Bar Chama says, so, but the landlord, he knows his Mishnah, and he knows that it says that there's a window of opportunity, and I already waited longer than I can show it to anybody. This is even though he sold it, what does it mean to show it to someone? We're going to see. It means that to show something like it to someone that is his relative would say, you know, "Oh, you sold that donkey? I know you're a donkey, right? You should have gotten 60 for it, not 50. So I already waited longer than that would take. So that's it. Now the sale is final. So they sent this question to Rav Nachman for a ruling. Avamocher leolam hozer. And Rav Nachman applies his ruling that we just saw before. This might be the original context of his ruling in this case. He said that window of opportunity closes only for a buyer. He has 1 hour to go and check. But a seller, he can get his money back forever. And so that's fine. Go ahead and go to that buyer and get your money. Get that other $10 that you're losing out on. My tama lokech mikacho biyado kol echad ezim machvilev amri le ita'a ila ta'a. What's the difference between the buyer and the seller? What's the reason for Rav Nachman? It's as follows. A buyer, when he buys something, he has the merchandise in his possession. And everywhere he goes, he can show someone, "Oh, look at this nice donkey I bought. Really? Oh, very nice. How much did you pay?" And let's say he says, "I paid 70. They're going to say, "You paid 70 for that? What are you talking about? That's only worth 60. He says, "Really? It's only worth 60? So immediately he'll go back, right? Since he has it with him, he's walking around with it, he's obviously going to talk about it with whoever he meets, his relative, another merchant. And so, therefore, we can impose a time limit on the buyer. However, the seller doesn't have the item with him. By definition, he sold it. But since the seller does not have the item in his hand, so he has to wait until he happens to see another item just like the thing he sold, right? He'll come and see his friend eventually. His friend says he has a donkey. "Oh, that donkey, it's the same size, just like the donkey I sold." "How much did you sell it for?" "Oh, 50. "You sold yours for 50. This one is worth 60. He says, "Oh, well, if that's worth, mine is also worth 60. So, but he's not going to realize right away, because he's not walking around with it to start up a conversation with everybody. He's not going to run to someone and look around for a donkey like his, so he won't realize till for a long time. Therefore, Rav Nachman says it makes sense that a seller should not have a window of opportunity. A buyer, yeah, listen, you have an hour. That should be sufficient for you to realize that you were overcharged. Another story. Kare shita veshavya chamisha vilu hava havu yatebi le chamsha falga hava shakil. This guy, not a store owner, just a regular guy. He had some silk strips and he's selling them. And now he's saying, "I'll sell these for 6 ma'a." Now really they're only worth 5. But then he also said, "Listen, I'm selling it for 6. If you'll give me 5.50, I'll sell it to you right now." That way, he's a good salesman, right? He says, "Really worth 6, 5 for you, 5.50, right? I'll sell it to you right now." So a buyer came along, and this is a very smart buyer. Listen to his logic. He says, listen, if I give him 550, then it's an overcharge because I know that it's really worth 5. If I give him 550, that's less than 1/6. It's only 1/10 of an overcharge. And then that's it. The sale is going to be final. I won't be able to get the money back from him. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to offer to pay even more. It's worth it for me. I'll pay 6, and then I'll come to court and I'll say, oh, look, he overcharged me by more than 1/6, right? If I pay 6 instead of 5, that's 1/5 of a difference, which is more than 1/6, and then I can get the entire ma'a back. He doesn't want the sale canceled. He wants the item. But, right, ironically, by paying 6, he can get one back. If he pays 550, he won't be able to get anything back. So that's what he did. So he did that. The case came to Rava. And Rava said that the only time a buyer can get his money back for overcharging if he buys from a merchant, a regular merchant. But if he buys from a homeowner who just happens to be selling, had some extra silk in his house, like a garage sale, then you cannot make a claim of exploitation. This law is meant to protect people against merchants, not if just two people, regular people, are buying something from each other. If you buy something from a garage sale, there's no return policy. You can't go the next day and return the item. And so, sorry, you're not protected. So this buyer, he thought he was using a good trick, a good loophole, but in the end, he just overpaid. He paid 6 when he could have paid 550. Another story that's almost exactly similar. There was a guy who was selling some jewelry. The jewelry was worth 50 ma'a, and he said, I'm selling it for 60. But if you give me 55, I will sell it to you. Buyer comes along, says he knows. If I give him 55, then that's less than 1/6 of an overcharge, and that means I'm waiving my right to that, and that's it. I won't get that overcharge back. Since he said, oh, I'm selling it really for 60, I'll tell him, I want to pay the full 60. And then I'll take him to court, and I'll say, look, he overcharged me more than 1/6, and I'll get the entire 10 back. I could pay just 50 for it. So the case came to Rav Chisda, and he said, no, this getting your money back for overcharging only applies to someone who buys from a merchant, but you didn't buy from a merchant, you bought from just a regular homeowner, and therefore the law of ona'a does not apply. Sorry, you don't get your money back. When his other colleagues heard about this ruling of Rav Chisda, they said, Yishad kochacha, right? Chazak baruch, correct. You ruled correctly. This is true. It only applies to a store, but not to a merchant, but not to a homeowner. Hold on. We have a challenge against this entire ruling from the next Mishnah, which says that just like ona'a applies to, hedyot means a regular person, a lay person, so to it also applies to a merchant. That means it applies to both. What's hedyot? La balabait, what's hedyot? Is it not just a regular homeowner who's just selling some stuff from his home? Amar Chisda besadriyata v'amane tashmishte deyakire ale lam ezaben lehu ilav bedame yetere. So Rav Chisda explains, when the Mishnah says hedyot, that's if a homeowner is selling these vessels and garments that the homeowner makes. Sometimes people in their home, they would sew socks and little garments and stuff for sale. So even though they're not officially a store, it's not a merchant, but these things are actually made, they're sewn, manufactured for sale. So therefore, ona'a does apply to them. When Rav Chisda had made this ruling that it does not apply to homeowners, that's when the homeowner is selling his own personal garment, vessels or garments that are his personal use. And, usually, normally he needs them. But now he's strapped for cash. He needs some extra money. He gets his He gets a sweater, he gets a hammer, things that are his own, and he's selling them. Since he's selling them to get the extra money that he needs, so he can ask any price that he wants, even if it's worth a little more than the market price. He's not a market person. He's not a merchant that he has to stick to the regular market price. But this is a personal thing that is significant to him, is worth a lot for him, and he needs the money. And so if someone's willing to pay a little more for it, then the sale is valid. You have to remember, it was before an age of mass manufacturing, where each item was kind of unique, right? There is no other hammer or sweater precisely like this. So he's giving up on something, and that's valuable to him. So he only wants to sell it if he can get some good money for it. But he's not subject to the restrictions that would be for a merchant or for someone manufacturing little trinkets and things to sell, even if it's from his home. That's still considered like a merchant. Now we get to that Mishnah. So first of all, whether it's a buyer or a seller, the law of ona'ah applies. Not only if someone overpays when they buy something that they can come back, also if a seller gets underpaid, also they can come and complain and get their money back. As we just said, the ona'ah applies to a lay person and also to a merchant, although to a lay person it might be just to a lay person who is selling that item, even if they're not a professional merchant, but they're in it for business, not just selling personal items. The Biuda Omer and on the Ala Tagar. The Biuda disagrees and says, no, there's no overcharging for a merchant. And we'll talk more about his opinion. Mishe utala lav yado al elyonad, asa omer lo ten li ma otai, o ten li ma she inni tani. Whoever was exploited has the upper hand, and he can decide either, I says, give me the overcharge back, or the undercharge, give me that money back, or give me back the entire amount, the other way around. Give me back my money and nullify the transaction, or give me back that amount which you exploited. So whoever was the victim gets to decide, if it's precisely 1/6, they get to decide which one they want. That's the Mishnah. Minat Nemila, we ask, what's the source that for the opening law that ona applies both to a buyer and a seller? Well, it's explicit pasuk. The Braita says that if you buy something for your friend, do not exploit them. So that means do not exploit the buyer. So the buyer can be exploited. So that's a warning to the seller. Okay. So, but now I know that. But what about the seller? How do I know that he also cannot be exploited? Or cano? If you buy something, then as the buyer, do not exploit the seller. So you see that there's a prohibition both ways. Now, why do I need both? Can I learn one from the other? And the answer is no. You need both. If it only said that a seller cannot exploit buyers, that's because sellers, they know their merchandise, that they're in the market. They're in the market for that. They know how much their stuff is worth. And so we have to warn them in particular, don't exploit buyers. But buyers who generally don't know what the merchandise is, right? A seller is usually selling this thing all day long, so he knows what it is. A buyer, how often do you buy your refrigerator? You know, once every 30 years you buy a fridge. You don't know what the market value is supposed to be. And so you might have thought that we do not give a warning, a prohibition against a buyer for underpaying. How's he to know how much the thing is anyway? And therefore we need a prohibition against the buyer as well. And if it had only for the buyer, if only had prohibition against the buyer not to exploit, I would say that that's because the buyer is always gets a benefit. It's always better to be a buyer than a seller. Why? As a folk saying says, if you bought, you acquired something. A buyer walks away from a deal, and before he didn't have a sweater. Now he has a sweater. He's so happy he has a sweater. He can buy, he can use it, And even if he overpaid a little, whatever, right? He's happy that he has a sweater. He got something tangible that he can really use out of the deal. Whereas a seller, he is a loser. He walked in with this item and now he walks out and he doesn't have the item anymore. It's true, he has some money, but money is not itself usable. He can go buy something else. Maybe he'll get a good deal, whatever. But he loses out, all right? Because as people say, the seller, it loses out. Always better to be a buyer than a seller. And so therefore, I might have thought that the prohibition against exploiting applies only to the buyer. The buyer is in the upper hand. He's the one that's coming out ahead of a deal by acquiring something. So we have to tell the buyer, listen, you know, to make sure to pay a full amount, don't underpay. But the seller, who's in any case losing the item, maybe he is allowed to exploit and overcharge. And so therefore, the Torah has to say, no, both ways. A seller, even though he's losing the item, nevertheless, he still cannot overcharge for it. He has to sell it for the right price. And so you see, it applies both ways. Rabbi Yehuda omer en ona'a latagar. Mishum shu tagar en lo ona'a. Now we discuss Rabbi Yehuda. He says, a merchant, the law of exploitation does not apply to him. Well, why not? Just because he's a merchant, what's he can go overcharge people? How does that work? Why should that be allowed? Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav, betagar safsar shanu, ma'itama meda yada zibinte kama shavya, v'chule achil gabe, v'haydez abenachim mishum de'it ramya le zibinta achariti. So Rav explains that what we mean by this is that there's no exploitation against a merchant. If a merchant sells something for too little, then the merchant cannot get his money back, right? He had something that was worth 60. He sold it for 50. That's it. He doesn't get his money back. Now, what? Why? Because we're not talking about just any merchant. We're talking about a merchant who's a broker. He's a trader. And so he knows the value of it. And if he's doing this, he's doing it on purpose. Why would he sell something for less than the value on purpose? Well, so see, he knows the value of what it's worth, and he foregoes, he waives the that amount. Why would he do that? Because he has another deal right next door, and he needs some cash for it. So it could be he has this item for 60, and he sees a deal, right, that he can get, but he needs the cash. So he'd be willing to sell it for 50, knowing that this is less than the market price. And so that he can get that 50 and go invest in something that's going to be even more profitable for him. Sometimes a trader does that, right? He's got to move these goods even at a sale, even at lower than cost, that to make room so he can bring in these other goods and make a better deal out of it. So that's therefore a merchant cannot claim, oh, I was underpaid. No, he can't do that. Okay, we ask about this. Vashta miha kahadarbe. But, well, in this case, if let's say the merchant comes and says, I want my money back, that means that he didn't waive it. Right? You gave me a scenario where the merchant decided he wants to waive the extra. But that's only if he agrees to waive the extra. If he's coming and saying, hey, you only paid 50, it was worth 60, I want my money back, then he doesn't waive it. So then it should apply to a merchant. Rav Asher amar, mai en latagar ona'a, enor betorat ona'a, shafilu pachot mikedei ona'a chozer. Rav Asher interprets this line of Rav Yehuda in the opposite direction totally. What do you mean that there's no ona'a for a merchant? That he doesn't have the law of ona'a, meaning that for a buyer, if it's up to a sixth that he overcharged, then he loses out. That's it. He can't get the money back. But for a merchant, he gets more protection. And even less than one-sixth, if someone comes and pays, so it was worth 60, someone comes and pays 59, the merchant doesn't have the limitation of ona'a that only a sixth he can get back. Even 1/60th, he can come and get that money back. Oh, you underpaid by $1. I need that dollar back. Now, what's the reasoning behind this law? The idea is that a merchant, a regular seller, this is his livelihood. And if he went and sold, 100 items, always lower than cost, he's going to go out of business right away. So even a small loss in his margin, repeated, he's going to lose out all of his income. He's going to have to close up his business. So he has a right to get that money back. However, a buyer, I'm buying one cup of coffee. So if I overpay by $3 on this one cup of coffee, it's not going to bankrupt me. Okay, so I overpaid for something, but I'm only buying one of them. And therefore, a merchant seller needs more protection than a casual buyer. Tanya kivated Rav Nachman. Rabbi Yehuda omer tagad en lo ona'a mipnei shehu baki. But now we have a braita that supports Rav Nachman, the first opinion, because in this braita, Rabbi Yehuda says that a merchant, the law of ona'a does not apply to him because he's an expert. See, what do you mean, because an expert? Well, that fits with what Rav Nachman, name of Rav, that it does not apply to an expert because he knows how much it's worth. It doesn't mean that you're the store owner and you sold for less than the proper amount. That doesn't make sense. If you're an expert, and therefore if you sold for less the amount, it must be that you knew what you were doing and you decided to put this on sale because you wanted the money to invest in something else or whatever reason, and therefore the law of exploitation applies only to a buyer. He's protected, but a merchant seller is not protected by the law. Mi shehutal alav yado al ha'elyona. Then the Mishnah said that whoever is exploited he has the upper hand. We ask, mane matnitin la Rabbi Natan ve la Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Who is the author of the Mishnah? It can't be Rabbi Natan or Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. This is their opinions were quoted on a braita at the end of the daf yesterday. Over there, Rabbi Natan said that less than 1/6, this sale is final. If it's 1/6 exactly, then it's canceled. If it's more than 1/6, it's canceled. And if it's exactly 1/6, then he gets the amount of overcharge back. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi says that the hand of the seller he gets the upper hand. And if it's exactly 1/6, then he can decide if he wants the overcharge back or if he wants it canceled altogether. So now this Mishnah does not fit with either opinion. Let's see why. Our Mishnah says, whoever is exploited, he has the upper hand to choose if he wants to cancel it altogether or only get the overcharge amount back. But Rabbi Natan did not give a choice. He said, if it's 1/6, then he can ask for the overcharge back, but cannot cancel. So it doesn't fit with Rabbi Natan. It can't be Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi because Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi in the Braita that we saw yesterday said Yad Mocher Ala Elyona. He said he was talking about the seller, that the seller has a right to come in have a choice. Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi does give a choice. That fits with the Mishnah. But Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi seems to only have given the choice to the seller, to the Mocher, whereas the Mishnah's language talks about describes an example of the buyer. He says, give me my money back. That would be the buyer that would say, give me my money back, or give me the amount that you exploited me. So you see the Mishnah is assuming a buyer, whereas Yehuda Hanasi mentioned a seller. So now we're stuck. We have nobody could be the author. So we're going to have three answers to this. Amar Rabbi Elazar, ona azo, eni yodea mishana'a. Rabbi Elazar says, you're right, this is a third opinion. This Mishnah of ona'a, I don't know who said it. You're right. It's not Rabbi Natan. It's not Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. It's someone else. Rabba amar leolam Rabbi Natan hi. Utene nami babaraita rasa. Rabba said, no, I can reconcile it. And even though in the Braita it didn't say so, we have to fix the language of the Braita. It must be that according to Rabbi Natan, if it's exactly 1/6, then the ratsa, if he wants, you can read it even without changing the language too much. Because Rabbi Natan said it this way: Ona'a less than 1/6, it's a final sale. More than 1/6, batel mekach. And so when he says exactly 1/6, maybe he means not only do you have a choice of batel mekach, but if he wants, he has an additional choice that he can keep the sale, but get the amount of overcharge back. So all right, so we can reword the braita or re-understand it. it's a fit to be natan. Rava amar leolam Rabbi Yehuda Hanasihi umay deshiyer b'matitin kamefarish b'braita. Amar Rav Asher daikanami deketani echad alokev echad amocher mefarish le ladokech shemamina shiyureh shayireh lamocher shemamina. So Rava says it could actually be this Mishnah could be Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. And what is left out in the Mishnah, the braita completes. In other words, the Mishnah gave an example of a buyer, but the Braita gives an example of the seller. But when Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi said in the Braita, Yad Mocher Aliona, it was just giving example, if the seller is the one who was exploited, then he has the choice. If it's the buyer, then he would have the choice. He just gives one example. The Mishnah gives one example, and the Braita gives another example. They're not contradictory. They are complementary. And Rav Asher says that actually makes sense, that reading. Because the beginning of our Mishnah says both the buyer and the seller. Both the law of Ona'ah applies to both of them. And so then when it goes on at the end of the Mishnah, it explains the example. It chooses only the example of a buyer. And so you're right. It makes sense that it just left out the Mishnah doesn't have to bring every single possible example. It only gave the example of a buyer, but really it would apply to a seller also. And so you see the Mishnah could be the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Itmat, hamer l'chavero amenat she'en l'cha alai ona'a. Rav amar yesh lo alav ona'a, u'shmel amar en lo alav ona'a. So we have machloket. Someone says, listen, I'm going to sell you this thing on condition that you will have no claim of ona'a against me. If you go find out later that I overcharged you, you cannot come back and cancel the sale or get your money back. That's the condition of the sale. Does that condition work? Is it valid? Rav says that there is still ona'ah. The condition is invalid. The sale goes through, and if you overcharged, the buyer can come back and say, you overcharged me, and he can still claim it. We ignore the condition. Shmuel, however, says that there is no ona'ah. If you made a condition, so you agreed to waive your right to sue if there is exploitation, so therefore, the condition works, and you cannot sue. Lema Rav damar kerebi meiru Shmuel damar kerebi Yehuda. We're going to propose that this machloket of Amoraim is parallel to machloket between two Tanaim in the following Beraita about marriage. The Tanya, Hameli shahareat mikodeshet li amenat she'en lach alai she'er kisut ve'ona. Harezo mikodeshet utuno batel dibrer bimeir. Rabbi Yehuda omer bedavar shebemamon tena'o kayam. Beraita says, someone goes to him and says, behold, you are betrothed unto me on condition that I don't have to pay you for food or clothing. Ona has a number of definitions. It could be conjugal rights, which is not a monetary thing. If it means that, then it's not relevant to our discussion here because we're going to talk about davar shebemamon. But there are other opinions that ona means a perfume or jewelry or something monetary or like food, clothing, shelter, something like that. Okay, let's assume that is something that has a monetary value. So he says, I'll get married to you, right? Will you accept this ring and be mikudeshet to me on condition that I don't have to pay you anything? It is mikudeshet. It works. But the condition we ignore, according to the Bimeir, and he still has to pay for her food or clothing and her jewelry and perfume and other things. So he still has to pay according to the Bimeir. So it looks like Rav agrees with Rabbi Meir that if you make a condition, even though you made a condition, but it goes against the Torah, you ignore the condition and the transaction goes through and without the condition. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda omer b'davar shebemamon tena'o kayam. Rabbi Yehuda says that any time you have a monetary matter and you make a condition on it, then it's fulfilled. And so these are monetary matters. All right, the machloket in essence is, can you make something, can you make a condition against Torah law? Generally, you cannot. You cannot say, listen, you know, do this on condition that you're going to violate Shabbat. So you can't make a condition against Torah law. However, if it's certainly if it's a ritual matter. However, if it's a monetary matter, then Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, you know, someone who can always give a gift, someone can always waive their right to collect money. And therefore, if it's a monetary obligation or waiver, then it always counts, even though it's against the Torah. Okay, the Torah gives you a right to collect this amount. You say, it's okay, I don't want to collect it. Then you don't have to collect it, and therefore the condition is good. So Shmuel, who says that condition is valid, it would follow to be Yehuda. So do we say that? Generally, Amoraim don't want to be pigeonholed into being and according only with one Tana, they'd rather be across the board. So Amar Lachrav Ana Damari Afilu Rabbi Yehuda Ad Kan Lo Kamar Rabbi Yehuda Hatam Ela Diad Ave Kamachla Aval Hacha Mi Yada Demachil. So Rav says I can accord even with Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda only said in the case of Kiddushin that it's upheld because she knows exactly what she is giving a waiver to, right? She understands food, clothing, whatever ona is, or let's just focus on food and clothing. That she says the ona is not included in here. So that those things, she knows how much that is and what that means. She's going to get her own food, her own clothing. So she knows exactly what she's waiving there. Rabbi Yehuda says that it works. Whereas in this case, this is a general statement. He says, listen, this sale, you know, if you have no exploitation. Now, he doesn't know that he will be exploited, right? That he will have to waive. It's just a kind of a generality. You know, go, sign up for skiing or something. You give a general waiver. Anything that happens, you know, we're not responsible. Okay, you sign it without thinking. But do you really mean it? Like, if there's really, they put an obstacle in the way and you break your leg, right? Did you mean to give a waiver? So here, he's saying a generality, on condition that you have no against me. But then it turns out he charged the guy double. He says, what? I never agreed a waiver to that. No, but didn't you say you're gonna waive your right to ana'a? He says, I said that in a general way, but I didn't know that I wasn't consciously waiving my right to a particular amount, to a particular claim. And so, therefore, even Rabbi Yehuda, who says that regarding she'er and kesut, the woman waives her right, and we uphold the condition, but regarding a general waiver for any ona'a that might happen, but we don't know that it will happen. So in that case, the condition is not good, and so Rav can follow either opinion.
And
Shmuel said, I can agree with Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir could agree with me. And Rabbi Meir only said in the case of Kiddushin that the condition is batel, because you're definitely going against the Torah law. The Torah says that a man has to provide for his wife, she'er, kesut, and ona. You're definitely going against the Torah by saying the condition against it. So in that case, the Bima says the condition is invalid. But here, who said that it's going to go against the Torah? Maybe he won't overcharge him, and it'll be good. And so therefore, since it's not a definite abrogation of the Torah, even the Bima would agree with the position of Shmuel that the sale goes through, and the condition is valid. Okay, now we have a clarification of Shmuel's opinion. Amar Rav Anan. Shmuel's language was very specific and exacting. And Rav Anan says, Shmuel explained this to me himself. If the one person, let's say the seller, says, on condition that you do not have a claim of ona'a against me, then that condition works, and he can have no claim. He can have no claim because he said it in a subjective way, that you will not make a claim against me. But if he says it in an objective language, on condition that there is no ona'a, well, that doesn't make sense, because there is actually ona'a. I mean, if he does overcharge him, so there is ona'a. So you can't say on condition that there is no ona'a. So if he says that language, then the condition doesn't mean anything, and he can, and the buyer can come and claim, hey, you exploited me. Okay, now we have a challenge against Rav. Metibe. Hanosev anoten ba'amana. Pa'amer lechavero amenat she'en lecha alai ona'a, en lo alav ona'a. Braita gives one case. It's not relevant to us. We're going to come back to it in a minute. Someone who buys and sells, amana means I'm giving it to a third party, like on consignment, right? Here, you sell this, and then you give me a portion of the profit. So if he's called amana, like I'm trusting you with this. So if he goes and sells it for much less than the amount, or much more than the amount, so there's no ona'a here. I can't come to the guy, to this middleman that I put on consignment, and said, oh, you're giving me back more than a six, less than a six. So no, this is, it's like a partnership. And so I'm trusting you, whatever price that you sell it at and whatever agreement that they made, there's no ona'a there. That, now here's the part that's relevant for us. Someone who says to his friend, I'm going to sell this to you on condition that you do not claim ona'a against me. Then there is no ona'a. So this is a problem. Rav just explained that his opinion is, of course, according to Rabbi Meir, and even Rabbi Yehuda would agree with him. Well, if so, if everybody agrees with Rav, then who's the author of this baraita? There's nobody left. So this seems to contradict Rav's opinion. And Rav can't say, well, I hold like Rabbi Meir, this baraita is Rabbi Yehuda, because he just said Rabbi Yehuda agrees with him. So we have two answers. Baya says, no, it has to be that Rav does follow Rabbi Meir and only Rabbi Meir, and Shmuel follows Rabbi Yehuda. This baraita is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. And Rav, it's no problem for Rav because he follows Rabbi Meir. Okay, that's a simple answer. Rava amar la kashya kan bistam kan bimfaresh. Rava, whoever says, I can explain that Rav follows both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And we're talking about two different cases. When Rav says that there is no ona'a, that's a case where he made a general condition. Right? He says, listen, I'm selling you this thing on condition that you waive your right to any possible exploitation that should happen. But he didn't give a specific amount, and maybe he didn't exploit him at all. So in that case, the person says, yeah, I agree, but he's not waiving a specific amount, and therefore there is ona'a. But here in this baraita, this is talking about a case where he specified exactly what. He says, listen, this item is only worth 100. I'm charging you 200, right? Are you okay with that? I'll sell to you on condition that you don't come back with a claim. And I'm telling you specifically how much you're losing. I'm overcharging you by $100. And he says, that's okay. So if he says it explicitly, then there is no ana'a. And Rav would agree with that. And so would the Tanaim agree with that. So we're talking about two different cases, and that explains it. And we have a Braita that, in fact, makes this distinction between Stam and Mefaresh, the Tanya. Bamed bimamurim bistam. Ava mefaresh mocher shamar lalokeh chefetz ze. Sheni mocher lecha bematayim yodeh ani bo she'eno shaveh ela mane. Al menat she'en lecha alai ona'a, en lo alav ona'a. When do we say that there is exploitation and you can get your money back? That's when you just make a general waiver, right? General waiver, it's 10 pages long. Yeah, you just whatever, sign it. You don't really read it. So there, it's not, the condition is not valid and you can still sue. However, if you specify, for example, if a seller tells a buyer, this item that I'm selling you is worth for 200, you should know it's really only worth 100, right? You can go to a different store. You could buy it for 100. So I'll sell it to you for 200 on condition that you will not come back and cancel the sale. So in that case, if he agrees, then there's no claim because he waived it, right? And he says, I could give him a gift. I agree. I'll give you a gift of 100. So then he can't take it back. And the other way around also, a buyer comes to a seller and says, listen, I'm buying this thing from you for 100, but the buyer says, you should know that it's worth 200. You know, you can go get to the market, you can get 200 from this. This is not a good deal. But the seller says, okay, I'll buy it from you on condition that you're not going to make a claim against me. And the seller says, yeah, it's okay. All right, I don't mind. I want to unload it. I want to give it to you. So if he agrees to that specific amount that's stated, then there is no ona'a. So you see that this distinction is, in fact, in the baraita itself. And so it makes sense that we can make that okimta and say that this that baraita we just quoted is talking about a case where he explicitly said how much he is overcharging. Tenora banan, anose venoten ba'amana. Hadeze lo yechashib etara ba'amana v'tayafe b'shaveh. Ela o ze vaze ba'amana o ze vaze b'shaveh. The Baraita teaches that someone who does business on consignment, So let's say it's a whole mixture of goods, you know, let's say apples, and some of them are good quality and some of them are bad quality. So you have to make the same deal for all of them. It's much easier to sell the good apples, right? There's going to be always be a market, and the bad ones, it's going to be hard to sell. So what you're not allowed to do is say, listen, for the bad ones, that's consignment. You know, if you sell them, you get a percentage and I get a percentage. And the good ones, you have to sell at market value. That wouldn't be fair. Because then he's going to go out. So of course he's going to sell the good ones and he'll get market value. And then the bad ones that he can't sell, the consigner, the agent, will not be able to sell them. So now he's not going to make a lot of money on the good apples because he's selling at market value. And he won't make a lot of money on the bad apples because he's barely going to even sell them. And so that's not fair to the agent. Rather, he has to say all of it. The good and the bad apples are going to be on consignment, and you get a percentage. And therefore, he'll get a good percentage on the good apples, and because those for sure he'll sell. And then hopefully he'll sell the bad ones also, and he'll make whatever percentage. But it's fair, right? He'll take the upside on the good, and he'll eat the downside on the bad. Or you could say everything b'shaveh, everything at market value. And that way, he won't be making so much money on the good ones because he's selling them at market value, but he has an opportunity to make some good money on the bad ones. Since the bad ones have a low market value, if he's able to get some extra money from that, make some extra sales from that, then he'll be able to get a profit from the bad ones. So you have to make the same deal for all of the merchandise. Otherwise, it's not fair to that agent. V'noten lo sechar katef. Sechar gamal, sechar pundak. And the wholesaler also has to give to the middleman agent who's working on consignment the hire of a porter to carry the stuff from the warehouse to wherever he is, to carry the stuff and load it onto camels, hire of a camel driver, and lodgings if he has to travel. While he's selling this, he's going to be taking it and selling it in some other city. So the owner, the wholesaler, has to pay for those expenses because these are just these are business expenses. And so that agent is working for the wholesaler, so the wholesaler should pay for these things. However, sechar atzmo eno notel shekavan natan lo secharo mishlam. However, the wages of the agent, the wholesaler does not have to pay him wages because that's built into the deal. He already gave him his full wages in the amount that he will keep. Where does the wholesaler give to the agent his full wages? Right? Where do we see that come in? He gives an example that those who sell these inexpensive garments, so the agent gives him 4 extra ones for every 100 he sells, right? That's the usual deal for selling those things. And so that the agent already gets his wages from that. So the wholesaler doesn't have to give any extra for that, but he does have to pay for the business expenses on the way. Baruch Adonai Leolam. Amen v'amen.